Questions. They'd worked on his hand. The bruises on his face and the cut above his eye were faded. Probably happened when they blew up Kernsbeck's engine. But the hand was more recent. There was nothing artful about it. Smashed with a hammer, maybe. One of those hammers with teeth that butchers use to make meat tender. It looked like he was wearing a big red floppy glove. It looked like mincemeat, moulded into the shape of a hand by a bored butcher. It certainly didn't look like a hand that would be attempting to kill any kings again soon, or doing anything much ever. "You know they've barely started," said Vic. His red-stained eyes crept across to her. "What they've done there," she glanced down at that mess on the end of his arm, "is just to show you they mean business. That's a handshake. If I'm not happy with your answers, well..." She leaned forward to whisper, "I hear old Styx has taken a personal interest in your interrogation." He swallowed, the lump on his throat shifting. "And once old Styx gets out the instruments," she gave a long, soft whistle, "you'll be begging for them to shake the other hand."
"I told them everything I know," he croaked out.
"Everyone does. But they might have missed something. You might have missed something. Something you didn't even realize mattered."
"Will it make any difference?"
"It might. To her, at least. For him, there was no help. His Majesty's Inquisition tended away from leniency when it came to attempted regicide. Who planned it?"
"The Weaver,"
he croaked. Vic narrowed her eyes. "Rissinau?"
"Never met him."
He shrugged as if lifting his shoulders took all the strength he had.
"That's what they told me."
"Who told you?" His head was slipping sideways, eyelids fluttering. Vic snapped her fingers in front of his face. "Who told you?"
"The Baroness. Judge."
Just the sort of bloody theatrics the woman was infamous for. "Judge put you up to this?"
"Judge gave me the chance. I didn't need no putting up."
He worked himself taller, a touch of pride to his backbone, a spark of fire in his eye.
"My wife worked in a mill in the Three Farms, always worried about the machinery. I told her not to, but she always worried. Foreman would make her work late some days, asleep on her feet, but we needed that job. One day she stumbled, and the buckle on the drive belt caught her. They said it snatched her off her feet like the hand of Eos, flung her 20 strides into the ceiling so hard she broke one of the beams. Hardly had a bone in her body wasn't shattered. Her head then looked worse than my hand now." He spat the words, tears starting to gather in his eyes. "So I got no regrets. The Weaver gave me the chance. Strike a blow for the common man. Our blow might have missed the mark, but it won't be the last."
"Oh, don't be too hard on yourself," said Vic. "Your blow didn't miss everyone. It killed dozens of honest folk who'd come to watch an engine toddle across some fields on a summer morning. What about those poor bastards, eh? What about their wives and husbands and fathers and children? We've all got sad stories, asshole."
"Sacrifices have to be made. Would have been worth it if his fucking majesty didn't have that eater watching him."
Vic frowned. She'd had a sense something had been cut from the reports. "Eater?"
"We had the knights beaten. Then that little nothing-looking bastard, he killed Tuoma, killed them all, flung them about like they were straw."
She remembered what Schenkt had done to those two practicals on the quay in Westport. Big men tossed like dolls.
"But it don't matter what devil deals you strike."
The prisoner nodded to himself, a strange little smile quivering on his lips.
"Don't matter how many eaters you bring, or how many soldiers you hire, or how many folk have to die. There's a great change coming."
Vic gave a weary sigh. "Where's Judge?"
"A great change."
His bloodshot eyes had drifted beyond her, gazing into the bright future, maybe.
"And all the owners and the bankers and the kings and the Magi shall be swept away."
She remembered what Vitari had told her in that shack on the Westport waterfront, that the Union was Baez's tool, the banks and the Inquisition his puppets, that she was already dancing to his tune. She didn't like the thought that there might be some hidden world beneath this one, a world of eaters and magi and secret powers. As if she swam out on a lake, seeing the ripples on the surface, never guessing there were hidden deeps below, ruled over by who knew what unknowable monsters. She shook the worry off. She had to stick to what could be touched, explained, offered up in evidence.
"Where's Rizenau?"
she growled.
"The house of the Maker will open,"
he barked in a broken voice.
"And those that were there first will be last, and the last first."
She thought about smashing her fist down on that mess of a hand while she screamed the questions in his face. But he had no answers, none that helped her anyway. She got up and left him ranting, as mad as any of the cut-price prophets in Westport's Temple Square.
"The gates shall be laid wide, and Eos shall come again, and all shall be set right. You hear? A great change is—"
She pulled the door shut and clipped his voice back to a muffled burble. A practical stood outside, arms folded.
"His Eminence wants you,"
came hissing from his mask.
"Right now."
Vic strode past the eternally disapproving secretary between the two towering practicals and into the arch-lector's office, the door shutting behind her with a final sounding click. Time for some answers, maybe, or at least for some questions.
"Your Eminence, I have some questions about—"
She stopped with Baez's name on the tip of her tongue as Glockter's guest turned in his chair, raising an urbane eyebrow.
"Inquisitor Teufel." It was only the bloody king. "I never got the chance to thank you for your help in Valbec. You made me look good, and that takes some damn doing. That note of yours saved my arse, not to mention several thousand others."
His smile faded somewhat.
"Shame it couldn't save everyone's, really. And now I hear you pulled our feet out of the fire in Westport, too."
Vic cleared her throat.
"I am delighted I could assist Your Majesty."
She had slipped into the smooth, aristocratic, slightly constipated tone her mother might have used to greet the king. The full Victorine Dan Teufel. Pathetic, really. The king's so-called justice had sent her family to their deaths and her to rot in England. And here she was, grovelling before the latest occupant of the throne. That was the Union for you. Nobleman, peasant or convict, deference was baked in.
"I swear, you were the one person in Valbec who kept their wits entirely about them."
The king wagged a finger at her as she sat beside him. "I thought then, next time I'm on a sinking ship, that's the woman I want rowing the lifeboat." And he reached out as if to clap her on the shoulder. Must have sensed her deep discomfort, and ended up giving the back of her chair an awkward pat instead. She had to admit she enjoyed the gratitude. It wasn't something she tasted often, and like drink, if you only take it rarely, a small measure can make you giddy. Any gratitude, let alone a king's. But as the silence stretched, she began to consider that bit about the lifeboat and cleared her throat again.
"Is the ship sinking, then?"
"There might be some bailing to be done," came a voice from behind.
Vic turned, surprised. A man was leaning against the wall beside the door, a man she somehow had no inkling was there until he spoke. An unexceptional man with curly hair, average height, average build, average everything. The very look Vic aimed for herself when she wanted to blend into anonymity. The exceptional ordinariness of the expert spy, or the master assassin. It put her instantly on guard.
"Do you know Yoru Thulfa?"
asked Glockter.
We have never met, said Sulphur, though I too am a great admirer of your work in Valbec. He gave her a neat little bow. I was once apprentice to the first of the Magi.
Vic kept her face carefully neutral, but it was a struggle. Schenkt had said the Union was Baez's tool, and now she found his agent at his grinning ease with the nation's two most powerful men.
And now? She asked. His watchful eye, his sympathetic ear, his punishing fist? Asked Orso.
Let us say his guiding palm, said Sulphur. By all means, pretend I am not here.
Not easily done, murmured the king, holding out a folded paper to Vic between two fingers. I received another eye-opening note this morning, one that may give us more bailing to do than in Valbec and Westport combined.
Vic took it, unfolded it, and began to read. Your Majesty, there is a plot against you. Your open council plans to steal your throne. They have powerful allies in the north. They look for more in Styria. They will land their troops on the northern coast of Middleland on the last day of summer, declare themselves patriots, and march on Adua. You should prepare, but you should have care how you prepare. There is a traitor in your closed council, too. With best wishes, a friend.
Vic swallowed, her skin unpleasantly prickling. A plot. The open council. Allies in the north and Styria. A traitor in the closed council. This could be a threat to make the uprising in Valbec look like a village dance.
A friend?
The writing was odd, carefully formed, almost a little childlike. Vic turned the letter over, studied the ink, felt the paper, smelled it even. But there were no clues to who wrote it.
Any idea who this friend might be?
None, said Glockter. But people keen to declare themselves the friend are usually anything but.
Even enemies can tell you the truth, said Orso. Relations between the Crown and the Open Council haven't been this bad since, well, the last civil war, I suppose. Probably best not to dwell on how that ended.
Widespread murder and destruction, culminating in the violent overthrow and execution of a king. She placed the letter carefully on the Archlector's desk.
Who on the Open Council might have the audacity, the grievance, and the resources for treason?
Just about any of them.
Glockter licked at his empty gums.
Just about all of them.
But if I had to pick a man to declare himself a patriot while doing it, Isher would be the one.
Orso disgustedly adjusted his cuffs.
He tricked me into that mistake with Wetterland, and I've no doubt he manoeuvred Leodan Brock into his little display of petulance at the trial.
The Archlector was looking even more pale than usual.
Isher and Brock were married together.
One of them to his own daughter, as they were no doubt all well aware.
Enemies on the Open Council are one thing, said Vic. Their military resources are limited. The Lord Governor of England is another. He commands an army of thousands, well-equipped, experienced, loyal.
That prickling sensation was spreading.
Could Brock be a part of this?
The king took a long breath through his nose and let it sigh away.
Powerful allies in the north.
Your Majesty,
Glockter winced as he tried to straighten in his wheeled chair.
If suspicion falls on my son-in-law, it must also fall on my own daughter. As your Archlector, I must be above reproach. I should tender my resignation, or at least recuse myself from this.
Orso waved it away.
I won't hear of it, Your Eminence. You're the one man on the closed council I entirely trust. You're simply far too widely hated to make a good conspirator.
Glockter gave a weary snort.
Immensely kind of you to say so, Your Majesty.
Besides, we have no evidence. The one thing I'm sure Leodan Brock is guilty of is finding me contemptible. If that's a crime, I'll have to hang three quarters of the country. Have you seen the latest pamphlets about me, about my mother, about the debt?
Outrageous lies, of course, threw in Sulphur. Yet people can't get enough of them.
We could arrest Isher, offered Vic. I dare say we could pry the truth out of him.
Tempting, Glockter shook his head. But after that business with Wetterlant, no one on the Open Council trusts us. We cannot afford to hand them more martyrs. We must tread carefully and bring plenty of proof wherever we go.
In the meantime, we take the advice of our anonymous friend and prepare, said Orso. We raise our own forces. We gather every ally we can find.
We are spread thin, Your Majesty.
Glockter spread his thin hands. The King's own are scattered across the Union, keeping down the breakers.
Colonel Forrest helped me raise several thousand soldiers to fight in the north, the Crown Prince's division.
Orso smiled as if at a happy memory. It might be reformed.
At a cost.
In such dark times as these, said Sulphur, I have no doubt that the banking house of Valentin Bulk would prove generous.
Again, Vic kept her face expressionless, but she nearly shivered at the memory of Schenkt's chilled breath on her cheek. He had spoken of Valentin Bulk, too.
Generous, said Clockter, wiping a long tear from his cheek as his eyelid flickered. I assume you mean further loans at even more crippling rates of interest.
Sulphur gave a good-natured shrug.
They are a bank, not a charity.
Better to put my crown in hock than have it stolen, I suppose, murmured Orso, though Vic wondered if there was much difference.
I will go to the north on the next tide, said Sulphur. My master has powerful friends there. If this rebellion is real, it may be that I can nip it in the bud.
As you nipped the burners at the demonstration of Kernsbeck's engine? Asked Orso. Was Sulphur the Eater, then? Another like Schenkt? From the white-toothed smile he gave the king, it was not that hard to imagine.
I would hope more subtly, he said, but no less decisively in defense of Your Majesty's interests.
As long as my interests coincide with your master's, I presume.
I dare not imagine where they could diverge.
And Sulphur slipped out, pulling the door shut with that final click. Glockter sat forward, hands clasped.
Inquisitor Teufel, I would like you to observe the other members of the Closed Council. Subtly, of course. If one of them is disloyal, we have to know. Employ only people you trust, outsiders, if possible.
I serve and obey, Your Eminence.
Your Majesty.
She stood, then paused, with a hand on the back of her chair, thinking.
Something else? Asked the Archlector.
The note said they are looking for allies in Styria. Orso raised one brow.
And? I may know some people who could help us there.
The address Shiloh Vitari had given her belonged to a basement near the docks, odd lights glowing beyond the coloured glass in the windows, like the lights they say lure sailors into the deep. A man with a battered sea captain's hat and an even more battered moustache slumped against the crooked railings outside, with hands wedged in pockets, a sign creaking above him, a woman with a spear and a bottle, a fish's tail instead of legs, and a smile that said she'd seen things you couldn't dream of. The place looked like a child's picture of a nest of Styrian spies. Vic could only assume it was a double bluff. That, or their contempt for the Union was so great, they weren't even bothering to hide. The steps led to a warren of gloomy cellars and low vaults that reminded her far too much of the mines in the camps of Angland. The coloured candles were the flickering lamps as they shuffled into the dark, bent double. The clinking of glasses with a clinking of picks as they lay on their sides to nibble at the seam. The shadows writhing on the stained stone walls were her own shadow as she shoved the cold tub on with her scabbed forehead, squirming down shafts too tight to sit up in,
icy water lapping at her raw knees, knowing that if the ceiling fell, if a flame caught gas, if water broke through. She shook herself, trying to shake free of the fear. That was all long ago. That girl was gone, not trapped inside her, screaming to get out. A man lay rocking in a hammock, tattooed arms folded behind his head, sleepy eyes following her down the tunnel. A couple swayed together to the music of a plaintive violin. It wasn't clear whether they were dancing or fucking or both, but Vic ruled nothing out. A woman shuffling cards on a ruined chaise winked, then pointed on towards a bright space where the ceiling was a little higher and Vic could stand straight. She'd seen plenty of drinking holes, but never one so well stocked. Shelves were crowded with bottles of gleaming crystal and bland pottery, utterly plain and absurdly ornate. One filled with floating worms, one with a dagger for a stopper, one shaped like a grinning face with stones for eyes. "At last!" The barman's accent was a strange cocktail, a slosh of Styrian and a dash of the Union, with a few more ingredients which were harder to place. Tall and pale, with spiky red hair and a spiky red beard. He had a white cloth over one shoulder and a little monkey squatting on the other, and he smiled a wide smile full of good teeth.
"Victorine Dan Teufel graces my humble establishment."
"Have we met?"
"We're meeting now. My mother calls me Cass."
He spread his arms to take in the vast array of bottles.
"But to everyone else, I am just the barman. You don't look like my mother."
"I think I'd remember. Who's this?"
"My monkey. What can I get you?"
"What have you got?"
"What haven't I got?"
"Has it ever occurred to you that the more choice there is, the harder it becomes to choose?"
"It has been mentioned, but fear is a poor reason to limit your options."
He looked her discerningly up and down, like a tailor guessing a client's measurements.
"Tough day?
Is there another kind?"
"Have you ever tried Swarfine?"
And he plucked an unassuming bottle of bubbled glass from the top shelf behind him.
"It's only made in one village near Jakra. Hard to find here."
He whipped out two glasses, wiped them with his cloth, and poured two little slugs of thick, clear spirit with a practiced twist of the wrist.
"What kind of barman pours himself a drink every time?"
"This kind. Don't let the revolting smell put you off."
"I don't generally."
Vic took a sip and swilled it thoughtfully around her mouth. Up in the camps, they'd distilled every rotten vegetable they could get their hands on, but she'd still never tasted anything worse. Swallowing was against her every instinct. Afterwards, she could hardly breathe.
"What the hell's it made from?" she croaked.
"A secret more closely guarded than the colour of Queen Teresa's underclothes. It's an acquired taste."
"Why would anyone want to acquire that taste?"
Vic found she was taking another sip, shuddering as she swilled it around her mouth.
"Strange, isn't it? You keep having to check how disgusting it is. Then one day, you check, and you find you actually like it. Soon after, no other drink will quite scratch that itch. I've often felt that people are the same."
He dipped the tip of his tongue into his glass and thoughtfully smacked his lips.
"The ones you like straight away rarely turn out to be your favourites. I've a feeling you might be an acquired taste, Victorine Dan Teufel."
"Are you flattering me?"
He held up his finger and thumb and peered at her through the tiny space between.
"A little, but with a subtlety and class you don't often get in Adua. Shiloh Vitari doesn't like being embarrassed, but she likes people who can manage to do it. She works on the principle that it's your worst enemies that make the best friends. Have you come to take up her offer of employment?"
"No," said Vic.
"I'm happy where I am. Even though all the days are tough days? Adequately unhappy. So what brings you to my little patch of Styria in Middleland?"
And the barman raised his red brows as he took a sip of that disgusting spirit.
"Or did you really just stop in for a drink?"
"My employer wants to meet with yours."
He raised his brows even higher.
"Old Styx wants to meet with Vitari?
Let's cut out the middlemen. She tossed back the last of the spirit. King Orso wants to meet with King Jappo. Even the monkey looked shocked as she slid her empty glass back across the bar. Pour us another, eh?